Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
It's River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, remember the severe weather season of last year, 2023? March of last year had the most tornadoes than any other month in Iowa last year. 25 tornadoes. In all of 2023, Iowa had 72 tornadoes, according to the National Weather Service. This hour, we're focusing on most of the hour on severe weather. Iowa State University meteorology professor Bill Gallus will join us in a few minutes with the outlook for severe weather this year. He'll also tell us about a new storm chasing class. That sounds like something I'd like to take. We'll also be joined by one of his students in that class. Toward the end of the hour, we'll learn about a new USDA program that works with farmers and small rural businesses on clean energy projects, of course, tied into efforts to mitigate climate change. We'd like to have you, for the first part of our hour, share your personal severe weather experience. Did you have a great scare in severe weather in past years? Join us with your questions about severe weather preparedness and also experiencing severe weather yourself. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Are you prepared for severe weather? Joining us, Allie Bright is the Public Information Officer with the Iowa Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Hello, Allie.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. What types of emergencies should we be prepared for? Tornadoes, but other things as well, right?
Yeah, so in Iowa, we get all types of weather. If you are a native Iowan or have only lived here a couple months, you've experienced a lot. We get severe thunderstorms, extreme heat, extreme cold, and anything in between. So there's a lot that we need to be prepared for.
Okay. How should Iowans be preparing or have prepared for this severe weather, the typical months that we have severe weather here that we've entered?
Yeah. So the best way to be prepared is to actually be aware. So we talked about the types of weather we can get. So just kind of being aware of what comes with a severe thunderstorm, what that could look like. Actually, the derecho that we had is actually classified under severe thunderstorm, and that's how people would get warnings. So be aware of what kind of weather you get in your area. Maybe if you're in a flood-prone area, being aware of that, and what we should be doing. So it's really important that we learn more about the weather that can happen here in the Midwest, and then also learn about the weather for places that maybe we're going to travel to this spring and summer, knowing the signs for that type of weather and the actions that we should be taking when those things happen.
Mm-hmm. Let's stay with how to stay informed for the moment here before we move on. We have, now in the meantime, in our digital age, we have, cell phones, we have Wi-Fis in our house. We have to, though, be prepared that we may have our internet knocked out, right, with the electricity going out. I remember during the derecho of 2020, I lost my power at my home for 3 days. Many Iowans lost power for much longer, for weeks, right?
Correct. So there's a lot of good things we can do. So I kind of already talked about knowing the signs of weather, making sure that you're prepared and know the actions you should take. Iowa has this great alerting system called Alert Iowa. I encourage everyone to go to Alert Iowa, our website, Homeland Security website, and see if your county is participating in it. We have 92 counties on board. And they will send automatic weather alerts and local alerting by text, email, and phone call. Also, make sure that your cell phone has those WEA alerts enabled on them. A good, non-phone-based option is having that weather radio, knowing when sirens go off, what's going to happen. And then usually when something does happen, your local emergency management is going to be giving you information through things like new media that I talked about and old media as well. So if they need to, they're going to get boots on the ground, go door to door, get that contact with residents to make sure they know what's going on. But signing up for alerts is really important, so I encourage everyone to go ahead and do that.
Okay, search for Alert Iowa, and that will land you at the right website, right?
Correct, alert.iowa.gov.
Okay, alert.iowa.gov. Before we go to a caller or two, what are the most important emergency items to have in your supply kit?
Okay, so building your kit, if you don't have one now, the place to start would be with water. It's one of the most important things you should have on hand. As Iowans, or if you live in Iowa, you know, boil orders happen even if there isn't a severe weather event. So for water in your kit, we recommend that you have 3 to 5 days worth of supplies. For water, you need to have 1 gallon per person per day. So if you really think about it, if you have a big household, that can really add up. And you don't want to forget about your pets. Your pets need water as well. So usually about a half gallon to gallon, depending on the size of your pet. The other thing I want to stress with kits is it can be affordable. You can use items that you already have in your house. If you go to a fair or a festival and they're handing out those free bags or flashlights or things like that, put it in your emergency kit. If you've replaced things like clothing or shoes or bags, put those in your emergency kit. Next time you're at the grocery store, grab one non-perishable food item to add in. And you can also involve your whole household in building that kit. So if you have kids in your household, get them involved, have them help you make the kit, know where it's at, and understand the importance of having those items in your house in case we do need them.
What should you have in your car in the case of severe weather?
Right. So car, we get all kinds of weather here, so we want to make sure that you are prepared in case you are stuck in your car for a little bit. So really important, just you want to have those tools in your car, maybe jumper cables, some small tools, a flashlight, a first aid kit, weather-appropriate clothing. So if you need to put in some sturdy shoes, a couple of blankets, having that ice scraper is really important here. I think probably everyone hopefully already has one in their car. And then some bottled water and snacks as well. So kind of a pared down version of your normal emergency kit you would have in your house with a couple of items that are really specific to your car.
Right. As someone who has changed a tire in the pouring rain at one point a few years ago, throw in a cheap raincoat or an old raincoat in the back of your car in case you're stuck like that, you're changing a tire. I remember that so well. Let's go to our phones asking for severe weather experiences this hour. Your questions about preparedness. Matthew is with us from Wellman. Hi, Matthew. Got a story for us?
Yes. Last year, we're all at home. Family of four or six of us all saw it coming, what looked like at our neighbor's house, but it was several miles away. And we were just sitting there kind of freaking out. And far enough away, when you're on a high hill, you can see like, okay, it's not coming towards us. We hit the basement, 30 minutes, an hour later, family comes over and said, the farm's gone next door. Like, what? No loss of life, but the storm had turned and gone about a mile from our house and completely destroyed the neighbor's farm. We can't find the piano still. That's how strong the wind was.
Can't find the piano.
Right.
It's gone.
If you've ever seen those 100-year-old pianos, and I work on pianos.
Yes, they're heavy.
So they're heavy.
Wow.
Everything was like, take everything you own, put it in a blender with the top off, and that's your yard. It was a working farm, and we spent 3 days moving animals and looking for memorabilia, and just 300 people from that we didn't know just showed up in a community. When there's 5 square miles of 10 people, everyone from everywhere helped. So the community outreach you can get.
That's a silver lining in such cases. This was, Matthew, this was part of that widespread tornado outbreak that occurred March 31st of last year, 2023, right? There were nearly 100, in those days, there was nearly 150 tornadoes across the country, including 20 some here in Iowa, right?
Right. And another crazy anecdote here, some of the if you know the distance between Wellman and Springville, which is north of Marion, Wellman is south of Iowa City, they were finding receipts from the farm in Springville.
Wow.
with, you know, from a gas station that closed a year prior. So it was everything in the house from the farm just took flight. But again, no one was, no person was killed. The family is all okay. Excellent. And rebuilding.
And Matthew, we're talking
with really scary and stressful, but
we're talking with Allie Bright about preparedness. I bet you don't need to be reminded to be prepared for severe weather anymore.
No, we have, when you live rurally, you plan ahead, and that's right. When the power goes out, your water goes out. So city, you might have some water on yet, but you have water, have your food, but our preparedness was nowhere to go. Get into a safe location in your house or where you can.
All right, Matthew, thank you for those words of warmth.
One last thing, The neighbor, he ran to his basement, thank God he had one, and he said his safe followed him down the stairs.
His basement was
still there, and so was he. His safe.
Amazing.
Yeah, the floor was, everything from the floor up was gone, but he was safe in the basement. So have a safe place to go.
All right, Matthew, thank you for those words of caution. From Wellman, Matthew called 1-866-780-9100. Before we say goodbye to you, Allie Bright, perhaps share with us where listeners can go online to get more information of what you've shared with us, how to be prepared. Where's a good model, a good framework for how to be prepared?
Yep. So we encourage everyone to go to ready.iowa.gov. That is our website where we talk about how to make that plan and build that kit we were talking about. And it gives you some information on, you know, weather that we normally get and how you can be aware and what you should be doing in case that does happen.
Right. Allie, have you personally experienced severe weather, close call or anything?
I'm an Iowa native, so I lived through the flooding in the 90s. I lived close to Parkersburg growing up, so I was house sitting when that happened. But luckily, I haven't been in the past, knock on wood. I did live out of state for a while, so I actually did experience a 6.8 earthquake. So that was interesting.
Wow. Yep. Okay, Allie Bright, you know what you're talking about. We have to go, Allie. Thank you very much for all the information you've given us. Allie Bright, Public Information Officer with the Iowa Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Coming up, ISU Meteorology Professor Bill Gallus with the outlook for severe weather this year. Also, he has a new storm chasing class. We'll talk about it when we return.
Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com. Support for IPR comes from the Healing Room at Upstream Functional Medicine, offering medical spa services that support the body's natural ability to detoxify from environmental challenges. Learn more about the Healing Room at upstreamfm.com.
River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Our focus for most of this hour on the spring severe weather season. Joining us now in our Ames studio of IPR, Bill Gallus, professor of meteorology at Iowa State University. Hi, Bill. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been. Good afternoon, Ben.
Good afternoon to you. You have one of your students along with you there in the studio. Grace Hansen is a senior at ISU majoring in meteorology. Also, Grace, a vice president of the National Weather Association Central Iowa chapter. So good to have you with us, Grace.
Yes, thank you. It's so good to be here.
Bill, I want to start off with you, and I know you have some experiences to relay. We had that caller just a few minutes ago talk about a year ago, that massive nationwide tornado outbreak that affected us so much here in Iowa, and you have some firsthand experience there. But before that, let's get your view on what you can tell us about severe weather for this severe spring severe weather season 2024.
Well, Ben, that's something everybody always wants to know, and it's, you know, normally pretty difficult to predict an entire severe weather season way ahead of time. This year, we have two interesting things going on. We're coming out of an El Nino, and normally El Ninos bring kind of quiet severe weather seasons to Iowa, but we're heading rapidly toward La Nina, And there have been studies that showed that when you're going from the El Nino to the La Nina, we can end up with really active severe weather seasons in Iowa. That study tended to focus on years where it was a weak El Nino in the winter. This year, we had a really strong El Nino, which adds a little bit of uncertainty. There's a little bit more guesswork, but it seems to me pretty likely that the severe weather season is starting out slow and may continue slow through part of April. But there are signals that probably May and June could get really active here in Iowa.
And El Nino to La Nina, this has to do with the ocean. One of the main factors is the ocean temperatures out in the Pacific.
Yes, exactly. When you have an El Nino, the part of the Pacific closest to South America ends up warmer than normal. And when you swing to the other extreme, a La Nina, the water gets colder than normal there.
Mm-hmm. How does this weird winter weather that we had figure into the chances for severe weather? We had a couple weeks, some parts of Iowa, some massive snowfall, and then some weirdly warm weather in February.
Right. In fact, now that we've swung to colder weather, I hear a lot of people joking, we wish we had February back. normally, if you end up pretty warm at the end of winter and the start spring, you would expect to have maybe an earlier severe weather season set in, because we need that warmth for severe storms. It gives us instability in the atmosphere. But this year was sort of odd. When we had the warm weather, we actually had a weather pattern that generally brought us dry, sunny weather. So we avoided severe weather so far. It's been much more common, not far to our south and especially our east. I think Illinois has had a lot of unusual tornado outbreaks really early so far.
Yeah, but when we look back over decades, Iowa is one of the prime states in terms of violent tornadoes, isn't it?
Yes, we recently had a severe weather conference run by the National Weather Association in the Des Moines area last week, and it was interesting to see the statistics that Iowa is number three nationwide for states with the most violent tornadoes. Those would be the EF4 and EF5 since 1950. So, I think most Iowans I know are really weather savvy, but hearing that stat makes you realize why it is good that we Iowans keep up with our severe weather risk.
Yeah. Do we know about how the changing climate may shift that to other parts of the country? Are we still going to be part of the severe weather extreme watch area?
I think, that we are likely to still be one of the more active areas. It's very difficult to predict exactly how climate change would impact tornadoes. The warmer temperatures, the more humid atmosphere, that is favorable for getting more tornadoes or worse tornadoes. But at the same time, the winds in the atmosphere might tend to weaken, which makes it harder to get tornadoes. Probably the main thing we here in Iowa would notice is that we'll start having tornadoes earlier in the year and later in the year. So more of these crazy winter events like we've had in recent years is what we would expect with a warming climate.
Yeah. Bill, I understand on March 31st of 2023, you were a storm chasing, and very successfully so, near Keota, Iowa, right?
Yes, that was a day that was well forecast. And so it was a Friday. It worked out well for a lot of us from Iowa State to go out into the field. We were a few miles south of Keota and watched what we sometimes refer to as like the handoff. We watched one big tornado that fortunately had just missed Ottumwa, and it was to our west and becoming disorganized. And then suddenly the Keota tornado touched down and went from nothing to this violently rotating white tornado in about 20 seconds. So for a period of time, we were perfectly positioned to watch twin tornadoes on the ground, which is something I had never seen before.
So it was the best storm chasing experience you've ever had in your long career.
Yes, I told people chasing for 37 years, and I finally have my best experience.
Wow. Grace, did you happen to be along on that storm chasing adventure?
So I wasn't with Dr. Gallus, but I was with another group of Iowa State students, and we were fortunate enough to see that first Ottumwa storm actually when it funneled and dropped down. And that was my first real experience getting to see just how powerful those storms are. And it was one of the craziest things because we just came around this bend on the road and all of a sudden the tornado was touching down and going past us about several miles away. So it was definitely something that I'll never forget.
Yeah. You're obviously fascinated by meteorology. You're a major at ISU. Grace, what is the difference between experiencing what you did, what Bill did, in close proximity to such an ominous weather event and studying it on videos and in the classroom? What did that add to your knowledge?
Yeah, so I've always been a hands-on learner. I think that's kind of why I got into science in the first place, is that very applicable knowledge that science provides. And so getting to see things that we've learned about rather abstractly in the classroom actually happen in front of you, it really just pulls everything together, I think. It helps you to kind of like actually picture how these things are happening, and to be able to then, when you take that back to the classroom, I think it helps you be a lot more successful because you've actually seen it happen in action.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to a caller in Cedar Falls. Sherman is with us. Hi, Sherman. Do you have a weather experience? Yes, you're on the air, Sherman. Welcome to the program. Do you have a weather experience to share?
Yeah, I experienced the Belmont tornado in 1966. It was odd because it occurred in the fall. And that afternoon, it was Friday, a homecoming. They marched us kids out to watch the homecoming. It was about 85 degrees. The storm hit that afternoon, and the next day it snowed.
Wow. Bill, do you know anything about that storm?
Yes, that is a very famous event. Sherman, you're kind of lucky to have seen that. I believe to this day that is still considered the only tornado rated an F5 or EF5 to happen in the month of October nationwide.
Yeah, It was very strange. Like I said, it was homecoming afternoon, and they marched us kids out to watch the parade, and it started to rain, and they marched us back to the school, and then the tornado hit. So I was on the third floor of an old school building, and I watched the cottonwood that was massive come out of the ground. And there was no warning. There were no warning systems or anything then. We finally got to the basement of the school after the storm was over.
All right, Sherman, thanks for sharing your experience. Let's go to Fairfield. Laverne,
Hi.
Are you there? Hi, welcome to the program. What do you want to chip in?
Well, I wanted to share that as soon as I hear that there's a tornado watch in my area, I grab my prescription medicines and put them in a go bag with a flashlight. I think it's a good idea.
That sounds like a great idea, doesn't it, Bill?
Yes, that is a smart idea. Another idea, especially if you don't have a basement, I've heard people will round up bicycle helmets to bring with them so that if the tornado is coming and they're having to shelter in an interior closet or bathroom or the bathtub, they put the helmets on, and a lot of the serious injuries and deaths from tornadoes happen because your head ends up being hit by debris. So a helmet can really save lives. In fact, at this conference, we learned that in Moore, Oklahoma, which was hit by two F5 tornadoes in the last 25 years, they had begun requiring, or they had a big stockpile of helmets for the students to wear if there's going to be a tornado. Now they've put in storm shelters in all of their schools to withstand an EF5 tornado. And so they were able to give away all the helmets.
Yeah. So if you've got a bike helmet, if you've got like a ski or snowboarding helmet, if you've got a football helmet, right?
Yes. All of those would be great and would help protect you.
Bill, there is a storm prediction center with a new approach about informing about threatening weather. What is that?
So the Storm Prediction Center for decades has issued outlooks of the likelihood for you to experience severe weather by day. Like, what is the risk today, tomorrow, 3 days down the line? For the first time, they're going to be providing information hour by hour of what your risk will be. And it's been experimental the last few years. Many of your listeners probably know that about 2 years ago, Mayfield, Kentucky, was hit by a very powerful tornado. Several dozen people were killed. And it turns out this new tool predicted that the highest risk for a tornado in Mayfield was at 9:30 in the evening, and that's exactly when they were hit. The same thing happened last year, a few days before the March 31st outbreak. Rolling Fork, Mississippi, had the worst tornado of last year, and the system predicted the best chance at 8 p.m., and that's exactly when Rolling Fork was hit.
What makes this system more powerful for its predictions? Does it involve artificial intelligence, for example?
I believe that some artificial intelligence is being used. And, you know, this new tool was touted as maybe being very helpful for emergency managers. You know, those in towns and cities that need to be perhaps making sure they have enough staff on hand if something happens. They can use this, not necessarily have to bring in extra people for the entire day, but maybe just arrange so that the extra people are around in the evening.
Mm-hmm. And those listening to these warnings, watches, warnings, have noticed in recent years a change in the way we are warned. We're given more specifics, aren't we? Why, Bill?
So I think this technology improved enough that we could issue warnings as polygons, or you picture a little square or a rectangle. You know, if you're in a big county, it used to be a tornado could be hitting the farthest away part of your county, 50 miles away. You have no danger whatsoever where you are, but we could only warn the entire county at once. So the new system is really nice because they try to just pick out the people that truly need to get to shelter, those in a small part of the county.
Mm-hmm. Grace Hansen, tell us what excites you most about where we're going in terms of being able to predict these, what have been very unpredictable storms.
Yeah, well, I think first and foremost, just to help protect and save more lives, just being able to communicate more of that information that's necessary to the people so that they can get to safety, I think is number one, the most exciting thing. But I also think for being able to compare events from past events to now, I think you'll be able to see a lot of differences in, first of all, how people prepared for them, and also how different buildings and structures were able to fare in these bigger storms, just based on having more information being given out prior to the storm occurring.
Julie joins us from Johnson County. I think you want to talk about structures. Julie, thanks for calling in.
Hi, can you hear me?
Absolutely. Welcome.
So the newer part of my house was built in the 1890s. We're in Liberty Township, and my house is built just slightly to the northeast lower side of the top of the hill. Most of the tornadoes that come from Washington County seem to travel along a similar path. The Kyoto one that hit Coralville last March went by me about a mile or so to my west, and the one that hit Hills went by me and lifted about a mile to my east. But what I see in the Iowa City tornadoes that came in, what was it, like 2003 or 4, that did so much damage, three of those were just moving straight to my house when you look at the paths. And I see that the paths over the years that I've lived in this house since 2001-ish seem to repeat. And I wonder if when they built some of the older houses and things like this, if they took that into consideration. And I also wonder why tornadoes seem to, in that area that come from Washington County towards Johnson County, so often move northeast and follow that same path. Is it land formation? Is it geomagnetic? Is it geomagnetic? What?
Great questions, Julie. We have a couple minutes before we go to break. Let's let Bill tackle that. What's going on there, Bill? What can you tell us?
So those are very interesting questions. So the one thing you have to know about tornadoes, they're rather few and far between. So what we have learned is you sometimes see patterns where patterns really don't exist. Like if we wait another 100 years, probably the places that you feel like the tornadoes aren't tracking are going to be where they do end up tracking. Tornadoes have gone up and over the Continental Divide in the Rockies. I'm from Pennsylvania, and in a large outbreak there, they went down one side of a 1,000-foot mountain, up another side of a 1,000-foot mountain. So there's really nothing that we know of in Iowa terrain-wise that would help steer a tornado in any way. It just tends to be in our lifetimes, you know, our lifetimes are relatively short to experience too many tornadoes. And so we won't see kind of the random distribution happen. So yeah, there doesn't appear to be any place in Iowa that we think is preferred as far as what is being described here.
Mm-hmm. And go ahead. But Julie talked about structures, and you know structures very well, Bill. You've studied how structures withstand or don't or are demolished by high winds. And so we could do an entire hour talking about what you've learned from that, right?
Right.
I remember standing out in a huge field in Joplin, Missouri, years ago after that huge EF tornado, and the only structure standing was something that was dated back to the 1800s, as Julie referred to. So, I mean, you found that too, I'm sure.
Yeah, stone seems to work really well.
I think the Three Little Pigs had something to say about that a long time ago. We'll be back in just a moment with Bill Gallus, professor of meteorology, and Grace Hansen, a senior in meteorology at Iowa State University, to talk about a new storm chasing course. It's River to River from IPR News.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking for this portion of the program with Professor of Meteorology Bill Gallus of Iowa State University, one of his students, Grace Hansen, a senior at ISU studying, majoring in meteorology. Let's talk a little bit before we have to end here in a few minutes about a new storm chasing course on offer at ISU. This is called Field Observations of Thunderstorms. Is that the title, Bill?
Yes. Yes, that is the title.
So what? How many you've got? How many in this course, and what do you tackle?
So we have about, I think at the moment, 14 students in the class. We created this class because as long as I've been at Iowa State, 29 years, our students have asked us to create a course like this. Finally, two colleagues of mine, Dave Flory and Lindsay Modlin, and I created a class where we'll teach the students more about tornadoes, a safety in being out in the field when you're looking at thunderstorms and tornadoes. And it will culminate in an 8-day field trip in late May where we'll take the students out, and we hope to have many days of getting to view the incredible majesty, I would say, of rotating thunderstorms and tornadoes.
Mm-hmm. And so how will you conduct these field observations when you don't know when the thunderstorms will happen? You'll be, covering a lot of ground, traveling around the Midwest? Looking for them?
Yep. So that's one of the advantages of having an 8-day block of time. We can go to New Mexico if we have to. We can be scattered all over the place to position ourselves well. This will also help our students to gain experience forecasting, since we'll have to do a pretty good job anticipating, for instance, where do we think we're going to need to be tomorrow? And then when tomorrow comes, you know, narrowing it down, where do we think the conditions will come together the best for the best chance of seeing a tornado come from a thunderstorm?
Allie, Grace, what aspects of this course are you most excited about?
Yeah, so one thing that is really exciting is just being able to learn from, I think, the experts actually out in the field. Like I said, me and some other of the Iowa State meteorologists have gone out individually with ourselves and been able to see some amazing things. But I think being able to get the experience of Dr. Gallus and Dave and Dr. Modlin is going to really propel us to another level. So I think that is something that's really, really powerful. And then also, kind of like as I talked about earlier, just being able to see the things that we spent 4 years learning about in the classroom actually in person. And it's just like a really amazing way to cap off our experiences here at Iowa State.
And I understand Grace, all in this class will be certified storm spotters, whether you come across a storm or not?
Yes, we're going to be given a storm spotter training from the Weather Service. So that will officially declare us as official storm spotters. Some of us already have some of those certifications, just if we're interested in that before. But all of us will be trained under the experts of the National Weather Service. So we'll definitely know what we're doing out there.
Okay, we can't encapsulate an entire course, but Bill, this is not for amateurs, people without knowledge of this. What are some best practices to stay safe as a storm chaser? When should you feel qualified to do that?
You know, I think at a minimum, if you don't have a degree in meteorology, at a minimum, you should have gone through the storm spotter training and hopefully also the advanced spotter training that the Weather Service sometimes does. You know, some of the rules we follow, we generally do not recommend chasing once it's dark. You generally don't want to have to be going through the rain and hail part of the storm. You try to always approach the tornado from the east or the south so that you most of the time can avoid the rain and hail. When you're in those rainy hail areas with hail, you can't see anything. You always are planning out your escape route. So wherever you stop to watch, you make sure you know exactly what you're going to do if the tornado starts to come closer to you than maybe you at first expected it to.
When you're on the ground like that, Bill, how easy is it to predict the path of the storm? Can it take a quick turn in an unexpected way?
They can take unexpected turns. If you position yourself a few miles away, though, the kind of turns that they make generally aren't going to be a problem for you. If you're getting closer than I think you should be getting closer, if you're one of these people that wants to see the debris flying right in front of your face, then obviously the slightest turn in the tornado could put you in serious harm. So it's sort of an issue of scale. If you're really close in, you need to be ready at a moment's notice to suddenly get out of the way because the smallest wiggle in the path could affect you. But a few miles away, you might not even notice that the tornado is wobbling in its track. It will usually look like it's taking a pretty straight line if you're a few miles away.
So, Bill, I'm sure you and Grace have awakened the future storm spotters, storm chasers. What should someone do if they're interested in this?
I would say, you know, most schools have books on meteorology in their library. Of course, nowadays, I don't know how many people even go to a library to read an actual book. There's tons of material on the internet that you could learn from. Definitely attend spotter training, become an official storm spotter from the National Weather Service. We are always happy seeing students come in to study meteorology. So I would, you know, advise parents, if you have kids that seem to have a passion for meteorology, most of us in meteorology are born with that passion. And there's nothing better in life than pursuing a career in something that is what you want to be doing anyhow. It's your passion.
Okay, Bill Gallus, professor of meteorology at Iowa State University. Grace Hansen, a senior in meteorology at ISU. Grace and Bill, thanks for coming into the studio. Happy storm hunting.
Thanks, Ben.
It's River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Finally today, let's learn about a new program to help farmers and rural small businesses seek funding for clean energy projects. In our Des Moines studio, Teresa Greenfield, she is a state director for Iowa, the USDA Rural Development in Iowa. Hi, Teresa.
Hello, Ben. It's great to be here with you today.
Great to have you with us. Let's talk about, before we get to what this project is about, talk a little bit about the real threats that climate change, because this is the big challenge we have, presents to U.S. agriculture production in particular.
Well, you're absolutely right, Ben. We are seeing changes in the climate that really do impact our producers, not only here in Iowa, but across the country and the world. And at USDA, while we recognize those challenges, we have seen that this is really an opportunity for us to develop new programs and invest in our rural communities and our farmers and ranchers and small businesses in rural America to lead and to really be resourceful, and to take the historic investments from President Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, bring those home to their communities, and provide solutions to this big challenge called climate change.
Okay, specifically this program, this is the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Climate Change Fellows Program. Tell us about it.
Well, it's new positions that, again, were funded by President Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, which was the nation's largest ever investment into taking climate action. So it is historic. But the IRA provided $2 billion in funding to help farmers and small businesses expand their use of wind, solar, and other clean energy sources, or to make some energy efficiency improvements to their operations. And boy, we just need help with some folks who are committed to taking part in this climate action activity, folks that want to build their careers in rural communities and be part of leading the world in this energy transformation. And so they created this climate change fellow role, a job, and we have had the opportunity to hire two new climate change fellow in Iowa to help us.
Mm-hmm. And are they already at work, these fellows?
Well, we have one that is already onboarded and another one that's working their way through the hiring process. So, yeah, we're excited. We've got two new folks who are going to bring some new energy. And more specifically, they're really going to be focused on our Rural Energy for America program and supporting those applicants.
Right. Okay. Supporting these applicants. So now we undoubtedly have many farmers listening, rural small business owners, those connected with that, who may be seeking clean energy projects. So is it that these fellows will be helping access monies for clean energy projects, finding out if they're suitable for whatever part of the state these people are in?
Exactly. Our fellows have onboarded and will be joining our rural development teams. We have 10 offices around the state, a staff of 60, and these climate fellows will be focused on the Rural Energy or REAP program. And what we do in the REAP program specifically is provide either loan guarantee financing or grant funding to ag producers and small businesses so that they can invest in renewable energy systems or to make energy efficiency improvements. Now, these grants can cover up to 50% of their eligible costs, and that's a huge savings. And I know Iowans like to save a penny. I know I do. And yep. And so that's what they're going to be focused on.
Mm-hmm. So are there some projects that have already been erected, put together, that you can point to and say, we want more of that, and this is what these fellows will be helping subsidize, encourage in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, these climate action programs that were part of the Inflation Reduction Act are just one small part of President Biden's Invest in America agenda. And here's what those investments look like in our hometowns. So a flooring company up in Manchester in Delaware County, you know, they received over $14,000 grant to help install a solar array on their property and their building. And they're expected to save over $3,000 a year in energy costs. And I will have to tell you, I've lost track of the number of green farmers across Iowa who have made application and received, you know, anywhere from $50,000, $10,000. And all of them are saving, you know, $10,000 or more a year on their energy bills. So these are the kinds of applicants we're seeing. But there's also money reserved within the Inflation Reduction Act for folks to invest in anaerobic digesters or other new clean technologies. So we're going to work with all the folks that reach out to us and see if they're eligible. And if they can't access resources through USDA, we're going to lead them over to EPA, where maybe they can mm-hmm. access some of their resources also.
What do you imagine will be the most common challenges that these fellows will be working with farmers and rural business owners on?
Well, I think as we move to create a climate smart ecosystem and economic system, and I think that working with all of our producers to take advantage of all of the opportunities that are available to them. I mean, no question, President Biden's Invest in America agenda has really made these historic investments, but what we're working on and probably we're most proud of is that all of our rural neighbors, farmers, small businesses, they're grabbing it by the horns. They're building their businesses. They're leading to grow their communities. And I just think rural America and rural Iowa are really shaping the future of America and leading us towards solutions to this big challenge called climate change. And so our team, we're just going to meet every single farmer and applicant where they're at on their farm, in our offices, and help them be part of this this change.
Can you give us a sense of how many rural folks, how many farmers are already on board with these types of projects and how much room there is for growth? How many farmers will need to have their awareness raised and perhaps, what, create a new stream of income for a farmer, right?
Absolutely. And Secretary Vilsack has made that a priority as part of his leadership at USDA. You know, we've had 60 years of investing in farm production, and we've really created a system where it's get big or get out. And through many of these programs, we're creating opportunities for our small and mid-sized producers where they can create additional revenue streams by taking part in these programs, taking climate action, making investments on their farm. And really, these are the folks that we need to continue to grow our rural communities. So there's lots of room for folks to get involved in the program. Again, there were $2 billion set aside for just the REAP program. Wow. We've received over 450 applications, and we normally get about 100 a year. And I just want to encourage Iowa's producers and small businesses throughout the rural communities to reach out to us and let us help you make an application and save some money and increase the revenues on your operation.
Teresa, how do people reach out to USDA Rural Development here in Iowa?
Call me. See, they can okay. give us a call at 515-284-4663. If you like to Google, then you can head over to our website, which is www.rd.usda.gov/IA.
Let's see if we can answer Steve's question in Des Moines very quickly. Steve, we have just a minute left. Your question quickly, please, before we end our program. Welcome.
Thanks. So I'm retired. I have a small amount of income from investments in retirement, but I don't have enough to qualify for the tax breaks. So are there any programs that help people that can't qualify for the state and federal income tax breaks?
When it comes to solar panels,
private yeah. citizen, not a farmer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What can you tell Steve?
Steve, thanks for the question. I have to be honest with you. I'm not an expert in the tax breaks here at the state or the federal government, but I would encourage you to give us a call, and I'll do my very best to get you in touch with someone who is maybe not an expert, but can definitely give you some better direction.
Okay, Teresa, we have time enough for you to mention that phone number nice and slowly, please, and the website. People can find out more information.
You bet. Call us at 515-284-4663 or head over to USDA Rural Development's website, which is www.rd.usda.gov/IA.
Perfect. Teresa Greenfield, thank you very much. State Director for Iowa USDA Rural Development. Thanks for coming into our Des Moines studio, Teresa.
Oh, you bet. Always a pleasure.
15 years ago, Iowa became the third state, the first one in the Midwest, to establish marriage equality. Tomorrow on this program, it's a politics day, we'll have analysis marking that anniversary. What's happened to the issue of same-sex marriage since 15 years ago when Iowa became that third state? Political scientists Megan Goldberg and Wayne Moyer will join us. Today's program produced by Samantha McIntosh with help from Catherine Perkins, technical support from Sean McClain, and Tony Sarabia. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.